Welcome back, everyone. So it's come to that point. I gotta say, this is probably my favorite part of the entire MBA course that we're doing here, and that's putting together a battle system.
It's always good.
Yeah, I like this. Is my favorite in the module overview, and Brian wrote this. Finally, some Mortal Kombat. He's been looking forward to this pretty much all day, and ever since we started building this, really.
I'm more of the min-maxer RPG fan.
Okay.
I like to get the stats up there and then watch the crazy amount of damage that I can do in a single hit. So, yeah.
So we're going to take a look at how do we get a battle system in there, and specifically, how do we do a turn-based battle system?
Right.
Because there is other options. There's, you know, there's real-time, which is basically you're hitting each other at the exact, as fast as you can mash the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
So you can think of something along the lines of like a fighter game.
That's right.
Right? You also have strategic weight systems where you might have like five or six people in your party.
Right.
Right. Or like a party.
Or even an MMO standpoint,
MMO,
where everything's on timers and so on.
And you have to wait for it to cool down. So you cast a spell, you wait for the cooldown to take effect, then you can cast that spell again. Yeah, and like I said, you have a party system, so you might want to, you know, you can even have it set up, and I've seen this in various different games where one of your guys casts, and it does that way. Or it could be your entire party attacks or casts or does an action, and then their entire party does an action.
And again, those decisions are very important and integral to the kind of feel you want from your combat. There's also the initiative order ones where everybody just gets an initiative and that's the order which you go in. Sometimes it's two or three of your guys, then one of theirs, then one of yours, then three of theirs, just because of some random roll plus their speed or their agility or whatever factor that you want to apply. And again, role-playing games, there's lots of stats, so you can pick anything you want to be the deciding factor or the way you tweak to do whatever. There's also tactical strategy, which is another one. It's more about positioning is key. So if you're from behind or from the side, you know, it still can be turn-based, but the actual positioning is what is key. So we usually spin those off as tactical strategy games because turn-based. Mm-hmm. Combat games, because that's a little bit different.
There's a lot of variety, basically, is what we're saying. You can employ a lot of different battle systems. Basically, just see what fits best, what feels right in the current context, right? Yep. In our case, we only have one character. We don't have a party system.
Yet. Maybe in the future.
Maybe in the future.
Yes.
But we could, you know, looking at ours, it seems like a turn-based system would probably suit us best, considering what we already have implemented behind
right.
the scenes.
That's right. We already have single NPC interaction, so that'll work out fine. We can utilize that and leverage all the code we've got there. We could have them yell at us as we come into play if we wanted to. We could give them a message so he greets the player into the fight or whatever as well. And so, yeah, it seems to be right now that one versus whatever is the way to go right now. And a turn-based, you attack, I attack, is going to just be the simple stepping stones to get going, and then we can always expand the options or expand by adding just simple stats to both sides of the fight, an initiative order or multiple combatants and how that's going to be handled. But first, we got to get, I want to fight you, let's do this, and whack, 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 whack. Now what are the results because one side lost or won?
Mm-hmm.
How do I level up? I mean, we got all those kinds of progression, which almost every single RPG game, I mean, that's one of the most important parts, again, is your progression, your leveling, what you're getting, why are you here fighting? Otherwise, I might as well be here talking or shopping or exploring, right? There's a bunch of other things to do in a role-playing game, in an RPG game.
Well, because you're living in that world, right?
Exactly.
You're experiencing that entire world.
Yeah.
So, like you said, we need to get the first part set up. We need to get the, hey, how's it going? Hey, do you want to fight me type thing going on? And then we got to get to that interaction. So I'm thinking, this is going to be pretty similar to what we did with the shop.
It's going to be very similar to the shop. We've got to create a scene and a bad guy. Okay, we got to give a new role for that bad guy, basically, whatever we want to call it. We're going to call it Brawler. And then we're going to have to give him an action and some battle statistics, which the shopkeeper never needed. All right, we're going to need to get that in there, the properties that we want. So hit points, damage, his miss chance, if you want to go that route. A lot of combat systems like having miss chances or dodge chances and so on. You could put that in. And then really any other actions that the bad guy might be able to pull off. Maybe he has more than one attack.
Maybe he has magic.
Right, maybe he has magic. This is how you get magic in the game. You defeat this first guy, and under his little ball cap, you find the magical widget of awesome, and now you can cast some ice spells. if you buy them from the shopkeeper. We have all those options to us, open to us. And it's just a matter of picking the low-hanging fruit to start, get things running, and then we can feel free to expand.
That's what I really love about the RPG genre in general. When you're building these, you have so much room for flexibility, right? Like, as you're building it, you're like, oh, I want to go this route, and then it takes you down a different path, and you start imploring that, and it's amazing what you can really do in that genre, right? It's so wide open.
And we've seen a couple of new ones come out with different styles of play recently. And every year or so we get one that pushes the boundary in a different direction or focuses on something different because there is so much there to explore and so many just weightings of like how important combat is versus how important exploration is and traps and puzzles and story and growing yourself into the decisions you want to make and so on. There's lots of those opportunities and RPG is a genre that really just it grows a lot. And then we sort of expect more from an RPG, but then we get more from an RPG, so we miss a lot more. So then they tone it back, and then we just go in specific areas again. And it's always in flux on how much stuff we get versus how little we get and how specific it is versus how general it is. And it ebbs and flows at any point in time through console generations and so on. And so it's a neat genre because it's ever-evolving and always just slightly different every game that you go through. And that's what I think keeps it fresh for a lot of people because really RPGs are pretty much one of the original computer game kind of genres, the text-based RPGs, right? You could do all the actions. It just didn't have any good
graphics.
The
MUDs back in the day and stuff like that.
And then that was your first sort of MMO version, right? It was a text-based, massively multiplayer game where you're all playing in one user, multi-user dungeon. That's where MUD comes from. And again, that was way, way back. We've had those for a long time. I even had to work on one that used a text-based MUD, but then built a Flash interface and tried to give you that flashy graphics feel that you wanted before, MMOs came out that made that grand stage. So RPGs have grown all the way back from those text-based games all the way up to what we now see them with a huge open world environments that are visually there instead of just textually represented.
Yeah, we don't have to use our imagination so much anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Whew, that was always tiring when I was, a young kid. What are we gonna jump into?
I guess the first thing we should do is basically set up our scene, then, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the first step. We're gonna, again, the fight's gonna happen somewhere in the world when I interact with somebody, or when he jumps me in a woods on the Secret Pass, or however you want to set it up. And we're gonna just lay another scene onto the stack so that the main scene drops out of operation, basically, and we'll deal with the battle and the results, and then pop it off the scene stack, and we're right back to the game with our results. So that's
basically the same thing we did with the shop.
Basically the same idea that we did with the shop, the same kind of setup, the same kind of rules apply here. We're gonna need to re-implement our buttons and re-implement the controls again, because we're on a new scene, the other scene's inactive. Mm-hmm. But that allows us again to customize how we want the controls to work just for this fight and so on.
Makes
so that's not so bad. It also means that if you were to throw a boss fight scene later on, why not? You could have specific interactions and controls just for that boss. Like,
exactly.
If you want. And it won't matter.
It allows us that little bit of flexibility that we need when you're shifting from scene to scene. You even something as simple as the layout of the controls. If it doesn't match that scene, you might want to move them. Maybe you don't need any directional input. Maybe you just need a button. It could be a lot of different things.
You want to push RPGs in a new direction on a mobile device. Maybe the boss, because he bangs around and he's so heavy and he's jiggling, the buttons jiggle around the environment. And to make your attacks, you got to hit the button that's just drifting around on your phone. You can do whatever you want.
There's going to be 50 games in the store like that overnight now.
That's font of ideas right here, folks. There you go. So we're going to start with setting up that scene, but we're also going to need that brawler character. We're going to need his role, so we're going to look at setting him up as well. So let's take a peek at the code here. And I'm just in my game.js again. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm in my onload scope. All right, so if I scroll up here, we're in this, the window onload scope. Apparently I'm one character over. So it's just in the general scope of code, just like we did with the shop. And here we are. So first thing I'm going to set up is a new variable called battle scene, and I'm going to make it of object scene type, and that's again a object from Enchant that lets us know that this is a scene that we can push onto the scene stack and so on. Then we need that brawler, So we're going to set up a brawler object. We're going to give them some stats that the shopkeeper and the greeter didn't have. Okay, they were very simple. Like, there's the cat, right? For the shopkeeper, he just had his action function. He didn't need anything else. Maybe if you were trying to steal from the cat again, maybe you give him an awareness value as you started to put your thief mechanics in. So down here in our brawler, though, we're going to give maximum hit points in case something heals him during the fight. Mm-hmm. We got his current hit points. We also have the sprite and attack and XP and gold pieces and finally his action. So most of these are pretty self-explanatory. Sprite, can you guess what that is?
We're mapping it to the one that
exactly.
we
exactly. If I open my list. Sprite's PNG, he's number 15. Here he is way over here. So that's it's just labeling which one of these
guys.
He's
just been waiting for us all day.
He has. He was, I mean, saved last for best. Or the best for last. Ugh, there we go. So attack value. We're going to give him 3. He's worth 3 experience to us, we've decided. So okay. If you defeat him, this is how we're going to gain some experience to try to level up.
Those are just arbitrary values.
Arbitrary values. I just threw it in here for fun. Obviously got to balance that and test that out and probably should have done it during the game design phase. and then he's also going to drop up to 5 gold pieces so we can earn some income.
Okay. So this is how we make money to go back to the shop.
Right. Buy some more stuff.
Clean that
grind
cat out.
The normal RPG grind if you want, right? Level up. Get some gold, get some better equipment, and so on. Now, his action, he's not going to launch a scene.
No.
Like the shopkeeper. Or is he? Well, yes, because he needs the battle.
Yeah, we need to actually see the battle. So when we're interacting with him, he should be the one that launches this new scene.
Exactly. Okay. So there it is there, game.pushScene. Okay, so we created our battle scene. This is where we're going to push it. It's going to happen whenever we try to interact with this guy. So basically, you've stumbled into him, and you've nudged him, and now he's ready to fight. The one thing we have to do is we have to tell the player who his current enemy is as well for this for the way we've set this up. So we just say player.currentEnemy equals this, this being, of course, the brawler who owns this function.
And I like the fact that we're doing it that way, because down the road, you might want to build this out and have other people attacking him as well, right?
Right. The player just wants to know who his current enemy is. He doesn't need to, you know, worry what type it is at the moment.
Exactly.
So that's exactly why that's in there. So we also have to go down to our sprite roles and put Brawler in the last spot so that that role matches up with the sprite and so on.
Makes
so
sense.
We have, basically, we call this usually a parallel array. Okay, when we have more than one array who, instead of doing a multi-dimensional array, we basically, if they were all stacked on top of each other and I grabbed everything from index one from all of the arrays, they'd all be related data, mm-hmm. right? And we've done the same thing. Basically, I laid that sprite image over top of this array, the 15th guy lines up with the word brawler, and then if I lined that up with one of my other arrays that had some more information, all the brawler stuff would be there and so on and so on. So we call that parallel arrays, in case you've heard that term being thrown around. That's the other thing besides multi-dimensional arrays. So we have our sprite roles. We got our brawler in there now, and we're ready to set up a battle. So we're going to need a function for this. And this set battle is going to be called when we set up all the other things, when we set up our player and we set up our map. So it's going to initialize basically the stuff that we need in a battle scene. For example, what color do we want the background of our battle scene to be? We chose black again because it, again, lets you know sort of you're not in the world anymore. You're in a mini instance of something and you got to deal with this situation. And that's happened actually in I can think of many games throughout the time when they do a cutscene of your fight's going to start and the background goes black so that you focus just on the bits of color, which is your characters doing whatever they are. And basically, it's people experience this every once in a while. You're so focused on something, just everything fades away, mm-hmm. right? It's just getting...
Tunnel vision.
We're doing that tunnel vision, exactly. We're doing that kind of effect, but we're presenting it to the player mm-hmm. so that psychologically they're not even noticing it, but that's the focus they give to this event. Like, this is very important right now. So we're using that sort of psychological trigger on purpose so that there is nothing else in the world but this. This is key. This is very important. Let's handle this. And that's what we're doing in the battle setup. So you can, again, make a group, just like we did with our shop.
In our original stage.
In the original stage as well. We're going to have a label to display some things. We're going to call that menu.
Okay.
And we're going to position it slightly away from the left side of the screen, but farther down. So that's going to have white text.
Okay, makes sense.
On our black background, easy to see. Currently, the active action is going to be 0, so the first one, because we count from 0, right? And at some point, we're going to need to get the player status. In other words, display his hit points and, on the next line, his mana points. So if we had magic or something like that, we'd get to see both those indicators. So we've built a little function into our battle where we can just call for the get player status at any point in time. That'll be handy later on. Also, in terms of player status information, we're going to make a label that displays that information. So this is where it actually exists now, and we set it to white, and we position it. So this is the function that spits it out anytime we call it, and this is actually setting up that initial label with that initial data for the first time we go to fight.
Okay.
Later on, we'll have to reset player status to just battle get player status again to see what's currently happening. Now, we don't want the combat to be predictable.
No.
At all. You want to swing your sword or do your damage, and you want to have sort of a threshold or a range of what you can do. All right, and that's why we gave an attack value to both the brawler and the player. And when we need to calculate what it is, that's what this hit strength function is going to be for. We can call hit strength from the battle and pass in a variable, which basically is going to be the number that specifies how above or below that range you can do damage for. So we generate a random number, and we're going to add 0.5 to that. Then we're going to multiply it by that hit value, and then we're going to round it, but let it naturally round, not like before when we were flooring it, right? And we were always rolling it down. Mm-hmm. Now if it's 0.5 or whatever, it'll go up, and if it's 0.5 or down, it'll round down. So if we were to think about this in terms of what kinds of values we could get, whatever number comes in here is going to get multiplied by a 0 to 1 value that has up to 0.5 more. So 0.5 to 1.5. In other words, if this was 1, we'd get 1 times 0.5 to up to 1.5. So it'd be a range of 0.5 to 1.5. So it's bridging that gap around the number that we get passed in.
It goes both ways. It goes below it and above it.
Right. So the hit value we're passing in, our hit strength, is sort of our middle ground average damage that we're going to be doing. And other than that, it's going to scale in both directions, a little bit less or a little bit more, up to half of whatever that value is. So if we passed in, say, 10, okay, again, we could get a number from 0.5 to 1.5. If we got 1.5, 1.5 times 10 does 15 damage. We could get 0 plus 0.5, which is 0.5, so we get 5 minimum. And so we can go anywhere from 5 to 15 because the value we got in was 10. So the bigger the number that goes in, the wider the range is going to get. If you pass in 100, it's going to go from 50 to 150.
Yeah, just because you pass in 100 doesn't mean he's going to swing above 100 every time. It's
right.
going to go below and above.
Right,
in
but
the, same range.
The amount below and the amount above also
always
scales
based on
that number as well. You may or may not want that, but that's how this little system is set up. So the more powerful you become, you have a greater chance on your minimum of still doing more damage than before, but you also have a much greater chance of that maximum, that threshold that you can get, even higher. So we sort of effectively have given it more of a non-linear curve. We've given it more of a radical curve of some kind, which is a little bit better. We want to see those big numbers sooner, right? We want to see huge crits.
I thought you were going to throw in a sine wave there.
No. So now we need... Every battle's got to have a winner and loser, so we might as well build a function for that. So we've got our one function, so if we win, this is what we want to happen. One, the battle's over, so we set that to true. We give the player his experience that he's earned from the current enemy.
Okay.
We give the player the gold that he's earned from the current enemy. Okay. We also go ahead and reset the current enemy's hit points to max hit points, and this is just for the purpose of the demo. Basically, if you beat that guy down, he doesn't disappear, he just stays there, gets full hit points, so we can come back and beat him down again after we go buy another chessboard or whatever, or dragon paw. So that it's just done for demo purposes. You could also maybe expand this, so every time you beat him down, he gets more powerful, sort of like the Infinity Blade kind of series. Every time you go through the loop, everything's a little bit stronger and so on. You could do something like that, or you could actually have him removed from the game instead of resetting him. We just chose to reset him so we have one guy to keep practicing against, basically. And then the player status label text, so what we want to see outside the fight, right? This is the label text that we were using for the greeting and for showing our stats. It's attached to the player.
It's so our super amazing status label.
Exactly. We are setting that text so that when we leave this battle scene, we will see this text because it's now the scene that's active and it'll appear suddenly, right? So we're actually setting it in the scene that's not active yet, so that when we get there, poof.
It's already there.
We'll see what, right. And so we'll get you won, you gained however much XP, and you gained, you know, that many gold pieces. Okay, so that we got all that. We also make the height of the label a little bit bigger so we
can. So that you have enough room to fit everything.
For all that text, exactly. Now, the only thing we have to have left here is if the player's experience is greater than his current level stats at whatever level he's at, if it's greater than his maximum experience points for that level, and player's level is less than the total number of levels that we have in our level array that we specified
minus
earlier.
Minus one, because we're minus counting one. From one to the number that
right.
way.
Right, so there is that minus one, and I'll go back up and take a look at that in just a second, and we'll see that we actually didn't put, because we count from zero and up, mm-hmm. Just to make it easier on newer programmers, that level stats array, the very first element we just left as null, because you're never level zero. And that way, everything lines up with what you would normally be used to counting. And that's why I also had to throw minus one over there, so that we don't go out of range of the array.
Makes sense.
So if you have enough XP and we're not at the very highest level, go ahead and bump up the player's level. And then we should also let him know that he gained a level. So we're actually going to overwrite the status label, because this is more important than, you know,
how much money you just
how much
won.
Money you got. I mean, yeah, you got another $5 and 3 XP. Who cares? The point is now you gained a level, you got better hit points, you got more damage and so on. And so we highlight that instead. And we print that out with the status label as well. All right, now if you lose, mm-hmm. on the other hand, the battle's still over. Okay, so we don't have to worry about that. And then the player's hit points get reset because we want to try again. So he yep. learns his lesson, he gets his hit points back to max. His mana is going to get reset back to max.
Auto-healed.
Yeah, his gold, however, he's going to have to pay for this.
Ooh.
Okay, we're going to divide his gold by 2 and round down or up. We're just going to round it.
That's a costly loss.
It could be. If you had 100 gold, you just lost 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you could lose quite a bit. If you had pennies, whatever, you didn't lose anything.
You lost half a penny.
That's right, you can try again. So that's our sort of way to balance risk and reward. If you got a lot of money, every fight you get into is more risky because you are going to lose more if you lose this fight. So you want to be careful, and that was just sort of an inherent, you know, seeing where we want to take this, we want to build that risk and reward in. If you're poor, then it's okay. It's not a big deal. You can just throw yourself into any bad situation and, you know, see if you come out with the upper hand and you've made some progress. But if you're running around with bags of money in your hand, every fight is, you know, going to be a little bit more costly. So that's what we've done there. And we simply print out that you lost. That sums up enough. We don't really need to add anything else to the status message. It probably would have been nice to actually tell the player he lost money.
Yes.
Okay, so you probably should print out, you know, you lost this much gold because you lost the fight. And that way he doesn't go get beat and he's like, oh, I should go buy that dragon paw and come back. And then he goes over there and he's like, wait, who stole all my money?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we probably want to print it out, but right now it just says you lost. So we've got won and lost done. But how do we actually win or lose?
We gotta get there.
So our next two functions in the battle, one's player attack and one's enemy attack, and they're very similar. As you can see, they take pretty much the exact same lines of code.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is we want to know who our current enemy is, and we ask the player about that, who his current enemy is, and then we go ahead and calculate the hit strength for the player's attack. So we ask the player what his attack value is, it hands it back, that gets passed into hit strength, it calculates that random range for us, and passes it back into our player hit variable. Now we simply subtract it from the current enemy's hit points, and that becomes the new current enemy's hit point value.
And we display that up at the top of the screen, right?
Exactly, we display it on the screen, it'll show how much you did, and then there's our message right there. You did however much damage. Now, we don't put it on the top of the screen with the status.
No, we're using actually in the text inside of the
right.
scene.
Inside the battle scene, we made that menu label, we called mm-hmm. it. We display its text with you did however much damage.
Well, because if we did it to the status label, it wouldn't show up until we left the scene.
Right, and you would only see the last thing that happened. You would not
We would just overwrite it, yeah, it would be.
So that's why we're using the menu, or the status label, the label that we put into menu, basically, in the battle. And if the current enemy's hit points is less than zero, we've won the battle, so call battle win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the enemy, of course, is always going to get a shot at victory here, so we have to have an enemy attack, and his current enemy, or we're going to grab the current enemy again from the player so we know which enemy this is that's attacking, and we generate the enemy's hit strength based on the current enemy's attack value, and That goes into hit strength. It randomly generates that value, and that gives us the amount of damage we have. We subtract that from the player's hit points right here. And then we print it out. You took however much enemy did damage to you. And if your hit points are less than or equal to zero, now you've lost. So there's our two triggers for those two functions we just looked at. Battle won and battle lost only get called after an attack by whichever enemy or player that actually reduces your hit points to less than or equal to zero.
So yeah, it makes pretty much sense there. So we've got our character now. So when we approach him in the world and we talk mm-hmm. to him, he's going to start a fight for us.
That's right.
Right, and we have the win-loss condition.
We got that.
Right, we have the display. We have all the settings in there for getting our gold, for taking our damage mm-hmm. and stuff. Mm-hmm. But we still haven't talked about how you're actually going to
trigger the attack. That's right. So that's the next section. Here's our battle.actions array. And inside this, we've put a couple of different actions that can be triggered in a battle. Similar to the action we gave to the cat or the action we gave to buy something in the shop. But these actions, we're going to display them as a menu mm-hmm. for the player to select. This is to represent the player's choices, because we want meaningful choice in our battle simulator. Now, the enemy, he's just going to do his attack right now, but you could have given the enemy a choice in his action. Actually, you know, figure out what kind of attack I want to do, try that attack, and maybe have different damage ranges. You could expand it however you wanted that way. But as far as the menu we're going to show the user, we're going to have a fight action. Okay, and the function for this is going to trigger battle.wait equals true. What we're doing here is we want to show you the status of the player's attack, mm-hmm. pause for a bit, let you read it, show you the status of the enemy's response, pause, let you read it, and then ask for another action.
If we didn't do this, it would just fly by and you
right.
wouldn't really
we
see
We wouldn't
what
even
happening.
See anything happen. We'd just see the menu flicker and it would still say, do you want to fight again?
Yeah.
And we'd push fight and fight and fight. And
so we need that delay period.
That's right. So again, we're using this flag now. Now, last time we used a timer to do it, but the set timeout function, we're still going to use that, but this battle wait equals true is actually to make sure that we don't spam the attack button.
That makes sense.
As well, right? So we can't just keep hitting A so that we hit him 12 times before
he even hits
the timeout runs back so that he hits us back. Yeah. So after you've pushed the button, and this is why I said, remember, we want that immediate response. It goes back to what you're saying with in a shooter, when you shoot the gun, you know, you click the button and we do on touch start, that's when it should shoot right away, as soon as yeah. I pull that trigger. But it's a semi-automatic or whatever. We don't want it to spam bullets. We just want one shot to
maybe
come out.
We only wanted to shoot three bullets, stop.
Or something
shoot
three like bullets, that. Yeah. Stop, this case, we want one single fight action to happen. So we set this to true or to false so we know to stop in this instance for a little while before we allow another fight. So we'll see when that gets set back to false, we're allowed to do another attack. So we've chosen to fight. So we tell the battle, okay, let the player attack.
So that's basically saying let the player attack first.
Right, because it's his choice what to do. So he's chosen to fight. So he swings, okay, generates the random damage that the player does, puts up that message and shows it. So we need to wait. Mm-hmm. So we do a set timeout and we say we're going to actually wait for 1 second again, so 1,000 milliseconds for that. I'll just put the thing there so you can see that that's where that brace starts, that's where it ends. So this is the 1,000 milliseconds we're waiting because he's attacked. That gives you 1 second to see the results of your fight before this function gets called. And if the battle's not over, mm-hmm. and that got set if we did enough hit points to reduce the enemy to zero, we let the enemy attack back because we don't want to, you know, an enemy that's out of the fight attacking back, that wouldn't feel right. So as long as the battle's not over, this guy gets his chance to attack back. So we say battle.enemy attack. However, if the battle's not over, we now need to wait a certain amount of time. And when that 1 second is gone of us seeing that enemy's attack, we can then display the list of actions again, and that's where our battle wait gets set back to false.
Okay,
so that we now can choose an action, and it might be one of the other actions that we'll see down below in a second. Now, if the battle is over, that's going to trigger our else down here. And all we do is we still wait the second so that you can see
that it's ended.
That, yeah, he didn't attack. In this case, really, because it was our chance to fight, but then he got to hit us back, our chance to fight, but it's over, that means we defeated him. So it's going to set the battle menu text to blank right when this 1 second runs out and pop the scene off. So the battle goes away.
Okay.
So we've defeated them.
So once we kill them, it's going to pop the scene. And then it's going to trigger our new text of you got X gold, you got X amount of XP.
Yeah.
And it'll show it up on the screen. Okay.
So that's how that works. Now, actually, this is probably just me getting sleepy at some point. Because I have the same if check here, really, that battle enemy attack should be in with this code, and that can just go away. But I'm not going to change it on the fly, because that always can lead to bad situations.
Yes, exactly.
But something I'll point out for everyone else to clean up and make it much nicer. So our next action is magic.
Well, because we have battle, and not all the time are you going to actually want to take a swing.
Just fight. Yeah,
maybe you want to cast a spell.
Might need to heal yourself. Maybe that's the kind of magic you decide to put in the game. Whatever you want to put in the game, this is your opportunity to expand.
And I see there we have the last case scenario where you might want to run away.
That's right. We also have the run action where you can run away. So these are our two actions. Now, both of these, we've sort of left up to you. This is a part where you can inject your own wizardry into here, whatever you want to do. So all we've said for now, for our demonstration, is you don't know any magic, basically.
Fair enough.
That was a bad choice. Of course, we want to wait for a little bit. So we set a timeout again for 1 second. So, and because wait is true, you can't do any of these actions, and then we set wait to false after that second runs out, and we relist all of the battle actions again. And run, similar idea, only we're actually going to say you run away, and we're going to then pop this scene off, and where we say you run away is going to be in the status label. Okay, so the game's going to get paused briefly, we set the status label, we pop the scene off, and you're going to see you run away back on the main world.
So you're not going to see that inside the battle. You're going to actually, the battle's going to disappear.
Yep.
And in our status screen, we're going to see, hey, you just ran away.
That's right. That's what we want to see. So you just, because you're
Well, you're not going to be in the battle when you ran away.
Right. You've already taken that step. Just like when we leave the shop, you push down to leave the shop. Now you can choose run, and it goes right back out to the world, and you'll be basically in front of the guy so that you can step away and go whichever way you want. Now if these, we could make the enemies chase you around a bit and try to catch you or whatever.
He's always trying to inject some AI into the game, I'm telling you.
More fun. So those are our three actions that we're going to have in our setup. So the last part of the code that we're sort of missing here for those actions.
Display. We need to display those enemies.
Show those actions, exactly. Yeah. So we have a function called list actions, and what it does is it first makes an empty array of option text. And then we just loop through with a trusty for loop again for every action, so whatever action's length is. So if you add more actions, this code doesn't need to change.
Perfect.
Right? It'll automatically adapt to however many actions you put into the battle because it's using the length of the actions array, not a hard-coded number, which is what we always want to do. And it just simply checks if whatever action we're on is the current active action according to the battle, then we're going to draw a little arrow so that the player knows which one it is that he's currently thinking of doing. Okay, and then we just print out the action's name beside the arrow. Otherwise, we just print out the action's name by itself for that option. Okay, so this little arrow is going to be our indicator of what battle or what action we're thinking of doing, and we're going to be able to move that up and down, which, of course, we have to add the controls for. And so we'll get around
to it. Yeah, but before we get to the controls, okay, so I'm thinking we've got the ability to select what we want to do, that's displaying.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the text up there, we've got the battle up there, but I'm not seeing who I'm attacking.
That's right. So we have our add combatants function to our battle. This is the one that's going to draw, again, using a surface, putting it into an image, accessing the sprites PNG that we loaded, and that's who we're going to draw. We make a sprite for the player, we need to draw him, and then we make a sprite for the enemy, and we need to draw him.
And we're pulling those out of our, like you said, our already existing sprite.
Right, and they're both in this sprites PNG, so you can see that
we just scale them a little differently to make them look bigger inside
the
battle.
That's right. Image is going to be used for both. We've scaled both up by 2 in X and Y so that they don't look disproportioned. We want an even scaling.
And then we add both of them to the battle scene as opposed to adding them to the root
scene. Exactly, battle.addchild. Here we add the enemy and the other one. Where did that go? I lost the other one. Can't find it.
Hmm.
Where did I put it?
Well, it's got to be there somewhere.
It is, otherwise it wouldn't show up.
Show up at all, yes.
Can't search for it right now. But we'll find it in a minute.
We'll find it, yes.
So there we are adding our enemy to the battle as well from the sprite that we just created right there. So that sets up pretty much everything we need. Oh, I know why, because I added the player to the battle at the beginning.
Yeah, the very beginning of the battle setup, yeah. I just realized that too. So we've got our combatants on screen now. We've got our selection on screen. We've got our text displaying. We've got all the code behind it. The only thing we don't have yet is the controls to actually select things.
That's right. So that's the down here we have our enter frame. Now we'll come back to this battle scene on up here. So battle scene on, enter frame. So this is every time, again, it tries to refresh the screen, basically, we check, are we waiting?
Okay.
Okay, if we're not waiting, then we check for your input, right? So if we haven't triggered any attacks, you can push A, which is spacebar, and we will trigger, according to our actions, whatever the active action is, according to the battle, out of the battle's actions list, we will trigger that action. I know there's a lot of action there, okay, but it is a battle. Of course, it is a battle, so it's action-packed. But that's what we're doing. So whatever one has the arrow beside it, grab that action out of the array and trigger its action function,
Makes sense.
It is. And that's how we keep it nice and generic. So again, you can add as many actions as you want to the battle system.
And it's not going
to
break this.
And it won't break this part. Yeah, you can. And now we need up and down to work. So we have those, and all they do is change what active action is, and then get the list actions function to basically fill in the text for our menu so that we see that arrow move up and down. And
so
that's it.
So this is for the keyboard. What about the touch?
Okay, so for the touch, I got to go scroll down a little bit farther again. So just like we did for the shop scene, I made a battle pad.
Okay.
Okay, and I made a battle button B and a battle button A. And the battle button A is really the one we're concerned with in terms of touch. Okay, you probably have noticed by now, we've never done an on-touch start for pad. And that's because it's built into the pad object itself, because all pad does is always trigger up, down, left, or right.
Yeah.
There's no special cases there. A can do whatever we want, or whatever I labeled this button, it didn't have to be A.
It doesn't have to be A, it could be A button.
Yeah, or it could just say jump.
Stop.
If I wanted to say jump, start. So you can use these buttons. The nice thing about the UI is these buttons are how you could make menu systems really quickly and style them. And so they are not hardwired inside Enchant to be that A that we bound the spacebar to. So that's why we have to do our on-touch start for the buttons we want to do something, okay? Just I didn't point that out
earlier.
It gives
a little bit more flexibility, though.
Yeah, exactly. It gives us the flexibility to make any kind of button we want. So, I mean, you could type in anything you want for this word instead of A, and that's what you would see as a button, and then you can configure it to do whatever you want. In this case, we're going to do the very similar thing to the code above. If we're not waiting in the battle, go ahead and do the action of the currently selected action.
Awesome.
And that's it. And then we add that to the battle scene, and we add this one to the battle scene, and we add the battle pad to the battle scene so that they're all going to be visible. And there's the player getting added right
there. Sounds like we got pretty much everything we need to fight.
It's pretty much everything. The only thing left is on exit from the battle scene. We want to refresh some of the variables and so on for the next kind of fight.
We want to reset everything, and at the end, we actually want to resume the game.
And we want to resume the game. And again, there's a delay, so when we choose to exit, there's going to be 1 second delay before that actually happens, so everything doesn't just immediately disappear and so on.
Awesome.
But other than that, there's the end of our battle right there, because there's the shopping stuff starting. So that is our entire battle system all the way through there. So there is a decent amount of code that we've added to do this, but a lot of it is already what we've done in different places. We've already set up another character type and another role. We did that twice already for the greeter and the shopkeeper. We've already learned how to launch a scene with the shopkeeper. So the battle does that as well, launches a battle for it. One thing that isn't here is using our inventory maybe in a battle. So that might be another action you want to use is, you know, use item, put that in the list of the actions you can do. And then what that does is it maybe populates another list and you choose one of your four things that you might have in your inventory. And then something happens because of that. Oh, you take out a chessboard and I challenge you to a battle of wits, right? And you put the chessboard down instead of a fist fight, right? I bet the guy didn't expect that to happen, okay? Or you pull out a dragon paw and be like, I've slayed five dragons and see if a bluff works, right? You could make it whatever you want with these items, using them in the battle to do whatever, in a similar manner that we've done here for the attack, but now utilizing an item. And you'd, of course, have to make that secondary menu.
Yeah.
So that'd be a little bit more for those of you that are comfortable to actually doing digging into this and doing a little bit of coding on your own, then go out in that. If you're not too comfortable with that, go back to those, you know, the magic spell cast and just put something else in there. Do some extra damage. Make a cool fireball, whatever you mm-hmm. want the cast magic action to be, because everything's in there. Just delete our message so that, you know, it says something awesome and then does some damage to the player. To the enemy, like we did with the player. Maybe it's a defensive spell and it heals the player. You could put that in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of variety there. Yep. You know what we haven't done, though?
What's that?
Showed them in action.
Oh, okay, I guess if everyone wants to see it's not like we've been waiting for this.
We've been waiting all day for this. Weeks. We want to see this.
Okay, yeah. So we could run around here still. I'll come at him from the side, but there's no tactical advantage here. So it pops up. We still got our displays down here. Okay, there's our, you know, which thing we want to do. We can cycle through them, and of course it does wrap from top to bottom. I can try magic, but I don't know any, and then it flashes back. So if you, again, if that was too fast for you to read, just increase the delay a little. Maybe, you know, you want it consistent, generally speaking, for any of these kinds of delay settings. So again, we hard-coded 1,000 all over the place. Instead, make a variable called text delay and put in a milliseconds value very at the top of your code, and then replace all of those 1,000s that we filled in basically with that variable so that you can just tweak it in one spot and then it cascades throughout your code.
Yeah, you don't have to dig through your code all the time when you want to make a small
change. Right, so like let's really do this now. Let's throw some fight at him. Did 5 damage, I took 2 damage, and then our hit points update. Mm-hmm. Now you'll notice we're not displaying the enemy's update. So another thing you could have extended, put right beside the enemy in the same way that we do, print out the enemy's hit point and maybe his magic power if you get to start doing that kind of stuff, or his special actions or something else that you know he can do. So I'll keep fighting him, did another 5, he did another 2. Okay, I'm getting luckier, I might actually beat him, although he starts with 20 hit points, and I only have 10. Okay, I've done 15, I got a chance. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Okay, I got one more chance. There we go.
Yay.
I won, I gained 3 XP, I gained 5 gold pieces. Okay, so I'm gonna walk away from him here, and let's just check our status. So there, sure enough, there's 105 gold pieces, we got XP of 3, we're still level 1, and I've only got 1 hit point left. Okay,
you so need to heal.
if I fight him right now, I'm gonna lose a lot of cash, right? So that's not a good idea, so you know, we'll just walk out of here, we'll go over to the shopkeeper, we might as well spend some of our hard-earned cash before this is what happens when you play with the mouse and the things at the same time. There we go. Don't rest your hand on the keyboards. All right, so there we go. So we bought our chessboard. Our money's down. No, I'm not feeling about, you know, I know I'm going to lose some money, but I've spent some of my money. I really wish, you know, there was a healer in this game or something like that. So that's something that you could add, right? Maybe going back to this guy later on when he sees that you're hurt. Maybe he doesn't just greet you and say, hello, MVA crowd. Maybe he helps you out, takes a little bit of cash, and heals you back up. Or maybe there's a, you know, one of these bushes over here or something. I don't know, there's a magical, like, bush over here that we can, you know, hang out by, and it, you know, it'll heal us over time. I'm looking like it's going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. So you can put in whatever you want. But that's where we're at. So battle works, and why not go lose a battle?
Yeah, show just how sure. What it's like when you.
And we
you
can't lose. All be, you know, victors all the time. So I'll swing at him, and I did a decent hit, but I lost, unfortunately. So I'm just gonna walk away, and sure enough, my gold's been cut in half. I'm down to 23 left from my 45 that I had remaining. But again, my hit points have been increased.
That's awesome. That's a pretty decent game in the amount of time that we've spent into it.
It's not bad.
You can see that there's a lot of chance there to extend it and polish it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in fact, we're going to take a short break. We're going to take 10 minutes. And then when we come back, we're going to actually talk about the ways that we can polish it and potentially extend it.
Okay, and while we're taking a break, I'm going to keep swinging at this guy till I level up a few times. And then so I can see if that's working too.
Sounds good. All right. See you in 10.